First this morning, efforts to protect Western Australia's Kimberley coast from widespread industrial development have caught the eye of two of the world's major conservation groups. The Pew Environment Group and the Nature Conservancy have co-developed a program called Wild Australia, and they plan to spend about $15 million over the next 3 years on projects around this country. Barry Trail is from the Pew Environment Group and is in fact the director of the Wild Australia program. Barry, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Michael.
Now, the Pew Environment Group, I must admit, and it's a terrible thing to say, I don't know anything about you. Tell us.
Well, to be honest, I'm not surprised. Pew hasn't worked in Australia before, Michael. It evolved from a US-based organisation, is now doing more and more work globally.
Mm.
And Pew is particularly focused worldwide on three aspects of the environment. One is wilderness protection, which I work on. One is getting global fisheries sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is sorting out climate change, reducing the effects of climate change.
Where does Pew get its money?
From a range of major donors, but also it evolved in part from the Pew Charitable Trust, which was a family, US-based family foundation of quite some size.
And that Pew family made some money in an interesting way.
Yes, it was an oil business in the States from which the funding for the Pew Charitable Trust came up.
Yeah. So there's a certain symmetry to all this, isn't there?
Yes, yeah, there is. Yeah.
Tell us about the Wild Australia program, which is that program I mentioned earlier that's been co-developed with the Nature Conservancy. What's its aims in Australia?
What we want to do is work with local partners, people on the ground, to get in place protection for, you know, some of the really large natural wild areas remaining on land and on sea in Australia, and I don't think Australians often realise what a standout globally Australia is in terms of having these large, still large chunks of landscapes and seascapes in good condition.
When you say these wildlands, you say we've got some great areas to show off to the globe. Are we shrinking in terms of how many there are around the world?
Yeah, as part of their analysis before it came to Australia, Pew really looked globally at where the opportunities were for getting large scale protection. And I must say, I was quite, I thought I knew, you know, the remaining natural places on Earth pretty well, but I was quite shocked because very clearly Australia was only one of five land masses that had really, really large natural areas remaining.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Amazon, northern Canadian forests, the Sahara, which of course is mostly sand, Antarctica, and northern Central Australia.
And that's all we've got left.
Well, of course,
they're pretty big, aren't they?
Yeah, they're the really big areas. Of course, there are other very beautiful and important natural areas. But if you're looking at very huge areas where nature is still in abundance and things still work the way they always have, it really is, you know, it's down to those five.
I understand, Barry, also you've just released a book called The Nature of Northern Australia, which looks at the Kimberley, the top end, the Gulf Country and Cape York. And if we're talking about that landscape and perhaps money being thrown at it to help protect it, you've already done some insight into that as an author.
Yes, just last week we launched our book, including in Broome and in Darwin, on the nature of the north. And one of the, with three co-authors, what we looked at is, you know, just how important is it globally, and how the North works, what really makes it tick, and how we can look after it sustainably in the future.
So, given that significance of that natural coastline, and particularly the Kimberley coastline, you've got $15 million, I understand, within this Wild Australia Fund.
Yep.
How do you decide whether the Kimberley coastline is worthy of some of that money?
What we're doing at the moment, and the process will go on for a few more months, is we're talking with local people on the ground. Well, to backtrack a bit, what we've done is we've commissioned two expert consultants to look at where are these large, you know, intact areas specifically into Australia. We know generally they're in the north and the centre,
yep.
And in parts of marine areas, but specifically which are the best areas in absolute best condition. We're just getting that information back now.
So are you fairly confident that the Kimberley coastline, which is part of our story today, the coverage we're doing, which is potentially under focus for industrial development, do you believe that it's likely that you will be pushing money that way?
Well, certainly there's no doubt that Kimberley is stands out as being one of the areas in best condition, the Kimberley coast in best condition in northern Australia, and therefore, you know, one of the areas in terms of tropics, the best condition in the world. In terms of our funding, we've already put in, we're just doing some initial work with Environs Kimberley, a local environment group, to look at the prospects there, particularly of long-term marine parks. But we need to do more work with local groups, also potentially have discussions with industry, other local community groups, before we decide we're for a long-term commitment.
What about traditional owners?
And in community groups, including, of course, traditional owners, and especially, of course, their representative body, the Land Council.
Mm. So, Barry Traill, in terms of how money could be used, if it is targeted at the Kimberley, are we talking about money for campaigning, or is it money for policy change, or is it money for conservation?
It's a whole range of things that we could potentially do. We're quite... That's what I was saying. Whatever works with people on the ground, I think that's very key to us. In some cases, it could be property acquisitions. It could be supporting traditional owners to do Indigenous protected areas. It could be policy work to highlight the benefits of, say, marine parks. So a whole range of possibilities there.
Someone who's been listening, I'm sure, with great interest to our conversation is with us as well in the Broome studios. Kevin Blatchford is part of the Save the Kimberley campaign. He's the president of the Kimberley Marine Tourism Association. And Kevin, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Michael, and good morning, Barry.
Kevin, I know that you are quite concerned about potential industrial development of the Kimberley coastline. We ran a story about a month ago about this memorandum of understanding signed between a Japanese developer of liquid natural gas on the Marit Islands. I think that's an area that concerns you, does it not?
Yeah, the Marit Islands is one small part of a natural beauty, which is the Kimberley coast and its environs, and it's definitely under attack from the Japanese government-owned company INPEX.
You make it sound like it's under attack, but why do you say under attack? That's a very emotive term.
Well, this is an emotive issue. If you're passionate and love the Kimberley as much as people in Australia do, then you can't help but get emotive about it. We're talking about Australia's last great wilderness, one of the last great wildernesses in the world, and it's under threat from mass industrialisation.
What do you think would happen if things like an LNG plant came to that part of the Kimberley?
Well, for a start, it ruins the environment. If you took one of your old LP records out and just put a dirty great big scratch down it, you might only damage a little bit of the surface, but as a whole, it's ruined. And that's basically a snapshot of what the Kimberley would look like. Can you imagine, would we put up with the Great Barrier Reef having an LNG facility in the middle of it? Would we put up with that at Ningaloo? Would we put up with that in any of our national parks or great areas that we feel affectionate to? No, we wouldn't. And neither should we to the Kimberley. The Kimberley needs protection, it needs looking after, but above all, it needs management. It has no management.
You're a tourism operator in the area?
I am, yes. I've been operating up here for the past 13 years.
And so you're taking people regularly through this region, and of course it's a massive amount of coastline. Surely there's room for everyone to enjoy what is there, natural resources for tourism, but also natural resources for industry. Isn't there enough room?
Well, it's a matter of management. As we said, look, we're not opposed to development, but we're after appropriate development that looks after land and country. Now, the gas and these proponents have alternatives. They don't have to put one bulldozer near any of the islands or any of the coastline. They can do it on floating LNG as an example. They can pipe it elsewhere. Now, some of the proponents are looking at these alternatives, but we have one big problem at the moment with this Japanese company, INPEX, that are bullying their way into the Kimberley and trying to ruin it. Now, there's a lot of knock-on effects from oil and gas in the Kimberley. The Mitchell Plateau is full of bauxite. If there's a energy source there in the close to the plateau, then that can be used to drive smelters and factories to export bauxite from the Kimberley. So there's no cumulative there's all these ongoing accumulative effects with no management. You know, what's needed, we need to step back and have some good science and some good management regimes for our area.
Some of this coastline, Kevin Blatchford, of course, is under traditional ownership, in indigenous ownership. And when it comes to this particular company you mentioned from Japan, Inpex, I mean, they've been in consultations now, negotiations with traditional owners over the Marrot Island proposed base for some time. Don't you believe that traditional owners at least have the wherewithal to know what's what and make sure that they're protecting their own interests?
Look, there's a lot of carpetbaggers running around in the Kimberley offering very large incentives for Aboriginal corporations to look at proposed developments. Now, we understand the situation the Aboriginal people are in, where they're trying to get some sort of economic future. But is that appropriate, what they're doing? If one native title claimant is forced into a situation to negotiate on the thing they love the most, their land, then that puts pressure on the next native title claimant down the track. What are they going to sell to get an economic future? If we're going to have some sort of industrial development in the Kimberley, we need a fund that benefits all Aboriginal people of all the Kimberley.
My guest is Kevin Blatchford, who's the president of the Kimberley Marine Tourism Association. Kevin, if I may, I'd like to play you an excerpt from a conversation that took place on the Marrot Islands when the Japanese company arrived to basically celebrate, if you like, or ritualise this stage of their negotiations over the LNG plant. And here's part of what was said.
We don't want to see the turtles die. You can't change the way turtles are programmed. Once they are born here, that's where they come back. So we need to find those balances. We're also concerned about the rest of the coastline. Through this process, through the rest of Wanambal-Gumbra country and the rest of the coastal groups in the Kimberleys, we want to engage with government about protecting the rest of the coastline as well. That's prompted part of the thinking behind the Land Council putting out an ad calling for LNG developers, upstream and downstream, and financiers to come and talk to us, because we're trying to show leadership and find the common ground, the solution, so that we can go ahead and do these things.
Environmentalists suggest that having an LNG plant here could then pave the way for a bauxite mine and even an aluminium refinery on the plateau. Is that something you're afraid of?
I think people are very concerned about further development. That's why our discussions have to be with the government as well. We need a big resource project in which to do that. This does not mean a wholesale on the natural beauty of the Kimberley. We're not selling our culture. We're not selling out things. We're trying to be proactive and using a different way to protect things. Allocating this island as a potential LNG site is not turning our back on some fundamental principles about our values, our culture, and responsibility to the land, and our responsibility to the future generations as well.
That's the Kimberley Land Council's Wayne Bergman speaking on behalf of traditional owners about the Marrot Island negotiations with this Japanese company to establish an LNG plant. Back to you, Kevin Blatchford. That doesn't sound to me like a group of people who don't know what they want and what they expect. In fact, they've just mentioned they advertised they wanted people to come and talk to them.
Well, they've been forced into a situation where they need an economic base. They had their CDP removed from them in the Kimberley, and you know, this is part of a drive to get Aboriginal communities into economic development. Now, we believe in that too, but what we need to do is guide them towards appropriate development, appropriate economies. Now, Wayne's come out publicly and said he supports a hub concept. So do we. You know, we're interested in looking at that, but it's where the hub needs to be. Mm. Now, the pressure is on Aboriginal communities, because if it's not on their native title claimant land, then they don't get a slice of the pie. And what we're saying is, wherever development goes, wherever this hub could end up, there needs to be a slice of the pie put aside for all Aboriginal peoples. We don't have to destroy their country to give them a slice of the pie.
Barry Traill is the director of Wild Australia, having heard our conversations and also excerpts there from Indigenous people talking about their take, I guess, on country and development. Where do you see Wild Australia sitting in that kind of discussion?
Well, I think it's the key thing, and which having worked a lot in Northern Australia myself over the last decade, is we need to development's often seen as an either or thing. You develop or you have conservation. And I think our strong message in the book I was a co-author with, launched last week, and I think just common sense from the great majority of people in the North, is we must have development. We've got to have more development in the North. But we need to do it in a way that's compatible with the environment. We need to get away from this either or thing. You either have a destructive development or you don't have any development at all. And I think that's not even 20th century, that's 19th century thinking. We can do better than that now. And so for an area such as the Kimberley, and I'm not across, I don't pretend to be, because I'm not a local there across all the details, but where we need to go, I would say, is a regional development approach, which gets all people involved for regional-based solutions. Because there's no doubt that there is a risk with any series of economic activities, developments, that if they're just done incrementally, that each one may not have a huge impact, but they accumulate up and they can have a large regional impact. And that's not a comment necessarily on the gas industry, it's a comment on any economic activity.
And Barry Traill, could the Save the Kimberley campaign feel confident that some funding perhaps could be coming their way?
I'm not sure at this stage, Michael. But we need to not only look at the Kimberley and opportunities there, but there's some wonderful parts of the country where we could potentially make an impact.
Thank you for that. And Kevin Blatchford, I take it, therefore, that from what we've heard there from Barry Traill as the director of Wild Australia, it's not a foregone conclusion that you will be receiving any financial support for your fight.
Well, you know, we've been fighting this fight already without contributions from Pew. And look, we're going to look seriously at how we approach them. We have an alliance here now of all the NGOs that are concerned about the Kimberley, and you know, we'll get our heads together and we'll put some sort of presentation to Pew, and I'm sure Barry will look at that in its light. But what we do call for is government to lead a process that takes into consideration all stakeholders of the Kimberley. And you know, we can do this, we can just do it smarter. And what proponents need to do is make us proud of them. They don't need to destroy the environment, they don't need to put a bulldozer anywhere near the Kimberley coast. They can invent new technology if they have to, floating LNG facilities, they can pump it to an area that already has a footprint. Now we're getting proposals for different developments every day now here in the Kimberley. There is not one square metre of land left in the Kimberley that hasn't got some sort of tenement over it.
Okay, Kevin. Well, look, we'll obviously be watching the story too as it transpires across time, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Kevin Blatchford, who is the president of the Kimberley Marine Tourism Association and also part of the Save the Kimberley campaign, and Barry Traill, we look forward to hearing the decision on funding. When will that be, do you think?
Probably in the next few months. We'll be starting to choose some particular areas and particular projects and start working with some local people.
Good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael.
Barry Traill, the director of Wild Australia, part of the Pew Environment Group. You're listening to Bush Telegraph on ABC Radio National.